This cable program has been made possible in part by Cable Foundation members and a grant from the Portland Alliance. It's the city's oldest alternative progressive newspaper, reporting on issues ignored or distorted by corporate-dominated media, and providing a voice for social justice, activists, environmentalists, trade unionists, and the progressive community. Information is at 503-239-4991 or theportlandalliance.org.
We're proud to be here with our allies in the fight for affordable health care.
I'm Andy Seaton, KBOO News.
For KBOO in Portland, I'm Julie Sabatier.
KBOO's Afifa Ahmed Shafi reports.
I'm Stephanie Potter, KBOO News.
KBOO's Eduardo Delanderos Tiede has more.
I'm Annalisa Hummel.
And I'm Liam Delta.
This is Maddie Bowden.
I'm Alec News.
I'm Courtney Dillard, KBOO News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, Portland Police Bureau racial profiling statistic and Latino drivers are pulled over far more often.
Members of Congress are adding English language laws to pending immigration control legislation.
With little more than a week until presidential elections in Colombia, indigenous and campesino protests have been met with brutal force by Colombia's armed forces.
And in the human cost of occupation in Iraq, as of today, there have been 2,454 officially acknowledged deaths of American soldiers, with as many as 48,000 others wounded.
I'm Stephanie Potter, KBOO News. KBOO's Eduardo Delanderos Tiede has more. I'm Annalisa Hummel, and I'm Liam Delta. This is Maddie Bowden. I'm Alex Collins, KBOO News. I'm Michael Newman, KBOO News. I'm Courtney Dillard, KBOO News.
Stand by. This is KBOO. We're experiencing momentary technical problems. The time is 5:03. This is listener-supported radio. It depends on your contributions for our ongoing 24-hour day broadcast. The telephone number here for your questions and comments is 503-231-8032.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, Portland Police Bureau racial profiling statistics show white drivers are more likely to carry drugs. Nevertheless, black and Latino drivers are pulled over far more often.
Members of Congress are adding English language laws to pending immigration control legislation.
With more than a week until presidential elections in Colombia, indigenous and campesino protests have been met with brutal force by Colombia's armed forces.
And in the human cost of occupation in Iraq, as of today, there have been 2,454 officially acknowledged deaths of American soldiers, with as many as 48,000 others wounded. IraqBodyCount.org reports as many as 39,354 civilians have been reported killed by military intervention in Iraq. Other experts estimate the true Iraq body count may be as high as 250,000 dead. Good evening. This is the KABU Evening News for Friday, May 19th, 2006. I'm Joshua Olmsted.
And I'm Liam Delta. One of the murderers of Ethiopian immigrant Mulugeta Sarah was rearrested today for contacting a skinhead gang. Kyle Brewster, age 37, was taken into custody during a routine visit to his parole officer for alleged violations of his parole. In 1988, Sarah was beaten to death with a baseball bat by a group of racist skinheads near the corner of Southeast 31st and Pine, near Laurelhurst Park. Brewster was convicted of manslaughter and served 15 years in prison. He was scheduled to complete parole in 2008. Multnomah County law enforcement officials said the Anti-Defamation League tipped parole officers to evidence that Brewster had been in contact with Volksfront members on the Internet, including postings on MySpace.com. Volksfront is a white supremacist group that has been associated with numerous crimes in the Northwest. In 2003, Volksfront members murdered a homeless man in Tacoma, Washington.
Next Sunday, May 21st at 7 a.m., PGE plans to blow up the main cooling tower of the mothballed Trojan nuclear plant. The blast is expected to last 8 seconds, but the Trojan story has lasted for years, and it's not over yet. This week, the KABU News presented a retrospective on the ill-fated plant. Tonight, KABU's Rabia Yemin wraps up our series with a commentary about Trojan, Betchel, and the passionate feelings they evoke.
This is an editorial commentary which in no way reflects the opinions or ideas of the management of this station. The word Trojan evoking visions of a certain kind of computer virus different from, say, a worm, or perhaps a chariot-riding bronze-shielded warrior galloping bravely in competition, his horse also galloping bravely in competition. PGE spent about $450 million to build the power plant, and an additional $20 million a year in operating costs. Portland General Electric contracted Bechtel for the project. Of course, PGE was optimistic at the time of construction that customers would be receiving and paying for the nuclear-generated power beyond the year 2011. But the plant was finally closed due to multiple safety issues, which included an event where a cracked steam tube active released radio gas into the plant. This only 16 years after it began producing energy in 1976. But the controversy began during the plant's construction by Bechtel. Bechtel forgot to add reinforcing rods in the containment building during the construction of Trojan. PGE sued Bechtel, the contractor hired to build the plant, for being out of compliance with the Uniform Building Code and basically not really paying attention to detail, except for the details of getting paid. What's Bechtel up to today? While conducting my own version of investigative journalism, I hyperskipped over to Bechtel's own website. Winning a no-bid contract with the U.S. Agency for International Development, or USAID, for the reconstruction of Iraq's infrastructure is a pretty sweet deal when you have a poor track record of safety violations for something radioactive like a nuclear power plant. Bechtel's initial contract in Iraq included repairing selected power, municipal water, and sewage systems. They were awarded a second bazillion-dollar contract in January 2004 for more reconstruction in Iraq. Now, let's get back to the implosion. The erect tower penetrates upward 499 feet into the forested skyline. At its peak, Trojan produced a pulsating 1,100 megawatts of electricity, enough to service an estimated 400,000 households. Its spent fuel, including the radioactive core, were sent to a disposal site in Richmond, Washington. The rods, according to PGE, are safe and secure in concrete casks stored at the Rainier site. On Monday, spectators will don their helmets in anticipation as they gaze outward. No doubt their thoughts will turn inward, outward, then inward. No, premature implosion will not be acceptable. This is a carefully choreographed encounter. While the hard concrete tower explodes inward, humongous fire hoses will spew thousands of pounds of water on the imploding monument, keeping dust and debris to a minimum. Stay tuned all next week to KBOO News for full, in-depth, on-site, and historical coverage of the Trojan implosion. This is Rabia Yemen for KBOO News.
Black and Latino motorists are more likely to be stopped and searched than whites, according to news traffic statistics released by the Portland Police Bureau. KBOO's Lisa Loving has more.
The numbers showed the problem of racially motivated traffic stops had not improved in 4 years since the Bureau first started gathering statistics on the issue. Acting Chief Rosie Sizer said the Bureau will try to increase minority hiring and have officers attend upcoming community meetings. Officers also took a course that had them examining whether any potential biases may factor into their decisions. Sizer's comments echo those made by former police chief Mark Croker in 2002, when he created a blue ribbon commission to investigate racial profiling. This week's reports were the first update ever on those efforts. The 2005 statistics released Wednesday showed police stopped blacks at 2.4 times the rate of whites. Latinos were 1.7 times more likely than whites to be stopped. Blacks were also more than twice as likely to be searched when stopped than whites. Of the black motorists stopped, 27% were searched. Of the whites stopped, 12.5% were searched. Police found drugs in 4% of the searched vehicles that were driven by blacks and in 6% of the vehicles with a white driver. Of the Latinos stopped, 26% were searched. Of those, police found drugs 4% of the time. The Police Bureau has scheduled community meetings for citizens to speak on their experiences and talk about solutions. For more information about the schedule of those meetings, go to portlandonline.com and click on the Portland Police Bureau icon. For KBOO News, I'm Lisa Loving.
The United Nations Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues has begun a 12-day meeting in New York in the hopes of addressing the economic marginalization, political repression, and mass displacement faced by many of the 370 million indigenous people living around the world. Today, FSRN brings you the voice of Western Shoshone grandmother Carrie Dan, who used the occasion to speak out about the Defense Threat Reduction Agency's plans to experimentally trigger a massive explosion to simulate the effects of a bunker-busting nuclear bomb. The project is called Divine Strike.
I don't know why they call it divine. It's certainly when you're out to destroy things, it's not divine as far as I'm concerned. There's nothing holy about what they're planning on doing. This was scheduled for June 2nd, and from what I'm hearing now, that they have postponed it until June the 23rd. And so it's still in the plans of being detonated on Western Shoshone land. It's in Nevada, down at the nuclear site. And I think that's a very bad idea because nobody knows what's going to happen. It might destroy the water table underneath, because it's supposed to be something like a bunker buster. It's supposed to go down instead of, you know, going up. And so we don't know what's going to happen to the water table, and we don't know whether it's going to contaminate anything. But we do have a real strong belief that it will disturb the radiation that's already on that land, and certainly that's not good for anybody.
That was Carrie Dan's voice, recorded by FSRN's Rebecca Miles. The UN Forum on Indigenous Issues continues next week.
Yesterday, the U.S. Senate approved two amendments to its immigration bill regarding the role of the English language in America. One declares English the national language. The other declares English a common and unifying language. Some lawmakers say they're contradictory, and no one seems to be sure exactly what impact they'll have. FSRN's Leanne Caldwell reports.
By a vote of 63-34, the Senate agreed that English should be the national language of the United States. The amendment states that, quote, unless already stated in the law, no person has a right to have the U.S. government communicate or provide services or materials in any language other than English. The amendment, introduced by Republican Senator James Inhofe from Oklahoma, along with 11 co-sponsors, sparked an impassioned debate on the floor of the Senate. Democratic leader Harry Reid called the provision racist, while Republican Senator John Kyle from Arizona called it unifying. But what this amendment does is unclear. That's because there already is an executive order the Civil Rights Act, and court cases that say government agencies should provide translation services and documents printed in other languages. And that confusion was addressed in the Senate. Assistant Democratic Leader Richard Durbin from Illinois, followed by Republican Senator Lindsey Graham from South Carolina.
If we are eliminating this protection, which is currently in the law recognized by the Department of Justice, why are we eliminating it? That's my question.
In my opinion, Senator, the phrase, unless otherwise authorized or provided by law, would preserve that service. Simply stated, that language to me is intended to make sure that whatever service is provided in a language other than English through our federal government is not disturbed. And if you want to disturb it, you'd have to come back and do something
separate. But I ask my colleague then, if that is the case, if it does not disturb it, what does this add? What does it change? What does it bring to the law that isn't currently in the law?
Senator Graham went on to say that the Senate must debate what it means to be an American. Observers say that this provision would take years of litigation to figure out its impact. But immigrant rights groups and language advocates say, despite what literal impact there is, its symbolism is dangerous. James Crawford is an author on language and education.
Doesn't help anyone learn English. It's really a gratuitous insult that implies that people who speak languages other than English are less than good Americans.
The amendment also expands the English and American civics and history sections of the citizenship test, but it does not provide funding for English as a second language classes. To further complicate the issue, the Senate also passed a Democratic version of the amendment. It states that English is the common and unifying language, which will not alter any law. It's more like a statement. Since both amendments passed, the outcome will probably have to be worked out in conference between the House and the Senate. The Senate progressed rapidly through the immigration bill this week, voting on a number of amendments that are shaping the final product. Tracy Hong is Director of Immigration Program at the Asian American Justice Center.
It really is an historic time, and there's great opportunity for good things to happen. There's also great opportunities for some really awful things to happen.
The Senate voted to build a 370-mile fence along the U.S.-Mexico border, along with 500 miles of virtual fencing. They also voted to cap temporary worker visas at 200,000. That's a 30% increase from what was originally proposed. And the Senate also voted to bar those who violated their visa requirements from receiving permanent residency unless they can show their removal would have serious consequences on a U.S. citizen. The Senate blocked this week a provision that would have stripped from the legislation any path to citizenship, and another that would have put on hold the entire bill until the border is deemed secure. Furthermore, the Senate agreed to grant citizenship to the families of Filipino World War II veterans who fought for the United States. On Monday, the Senate is expected to vote on a measure that would remove any wage protections for agriculture workers. And also next week, an amendment that would provide a path to legalization for all immigrants currently in the U.S. is expected to receive a vote. For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Leanne Caldwell.
The current time is 5:18, and now time for another highfalutin daily commentary from Jim Hightower.
Friends, I'm appealing today to your most charitable instincts. I want you to know about the terrible oppression being suffered by a minority of our fellow citizens. Once you hear their story of horror, I know you'll be deeply touched and will respond with all the sympathy they deserve. I refer, of course, to the CEOs of America's largest corporations. Well, yes, it's true that this minority group is made up of pampered, phenomenally wealthy elites, but even the rich have feelings, and they say that they're feeling victimized by government regulators and prosecutors. The CEOs wail that these pesky officials are harassing them over such standard business practices as cooking the corporate books, inflating their own pay packages, and engaging in fraud. Surely we must help them. Last year, Americans opened their arms to Hurricane Katrina victims. Won't you do the same for this year's tragic poster child of charitable need, overregulated corporate executives? The CEOs, backed by a phalanx of their lobbyists, lawyers, front groups, and think tanks, are now going all out to reduce government oversight of executive wrongdoing. Leading the charge is the Cato Institute, a corporate-funded think tank filled with laissez-faire ideologues. The Cato Gang has recently published a book that concludes that America would be better off if there were no criminal enforcement of laws requiring businesses to be honest. Taking this poor, oppressed executive theme deep into the abyss of absurdity, the book carries an endorsement from Mark Levin, a right-wing radio yakker who blurts out this pitiful cry for help. Did you know that in many ways the terrorists detained at Guantanamo Bay have more rights than corporate CEOs and their employees? This is Jim Hightower saying, gosh, bosses treated worse than terrorists. Can you feel their pain? Yes, let's give these corporate honchos all the sympathy they deserve. Today's commentary is made possible in part by the good folks at Mother Jones Magazine. Over the years, Mother Jones has won just about every award available while ticking off the honchos of business and government. They're proud of both distinctions. Find out more at motherjones.com.
Stay tuned for Counterspin and independent native news following our newscast. Then at 6, hear Bread and Roses. At 7, Essence of Soul with Shahid Hamid. This weekend's weather. Instead, grab tickets for the Sexy Crew Disco Tour Bus heading up I-5 to Kalama, because real rain is predicted for Sunday in southern Washington. In the Willamette Valley, warm rains through the weekend with highs around 70. In the Columbia Gorge, dry but cloudy. Saturday's high around 74 and Sunday's highs around 70. You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Portland, Corvallis, Vancouver, and Hood River.
Minicles, Sozi, controversial, has secured the sort of friend owned by two dot, Skullabo, Reser, the African from Sage, Quincy, Gamp, at the West Rock, is it Pro, FN, Nga, Rumsal.
Friend Yumkla Saibo in neighboring Mali Wednesday, after French Parliament approved of his selective immigration bill. Many African countries had the same feeling of discontent about the very controversial bill, seen by many as another way of preventing poor Africans from surviving. With the new bill, only Africans with high degrees, the talented, the skilled, are welcome in France, and it is more difficult for immigrants to bring their families over or reach a French citizenship after 10 years of stay in France. In Senegal, one of the countries that has so many of its nationals in France working to sustain their families in their home country, many believe the bill is racist. Mas Diop, a Senegalese insurer, says Sarkozy's bill is a new type of slavery that seeks to keep Africa in underdevelopment.
I see this bill as a second slavery in the sense that Africans train their children and France will profit from them. It is worse than racism because the fact of allowing only people with skills and talents to enter France, I can't understand it. If it happens, it will mean that Africa...
Sarkozy's bill coincides with a new wave of clandestine immigrants arriving on Spain's coastal borders. A greater number of young Senegalese boarded boats from coastal towns of Mbour and Joal to sail to the Canary Islands, a juicy business for a local mafia that drew off some $500 per passenger for a dangerous and most lethal ride. About 1,000 Senegalese nationals are now packed in detention camps in Spain, waiting to be deported. Magumba Mbaye, a 29-year-old tailor, explains why all these youths set to immigrate.
I'm a professional tailor and I'm married, but I still wonder if I'll have children and find a home as my parents did. I don't think I can solve all my problems here. And today, I saw Sarkozy on TV as he was hailed by protests in Mali. But he must understand that this bill is not a reasonable solution. It simply means that we, the poor, will never have the opportunity to get out of poverty.
In Senegal, many see France as an ungrateful partner. In colonial times, Senegalese skirmishers helped France to contend Nazi Germany. Today, the skirmishers' sons and daughters are denied entrance. But for Issacha Diouf, a Senegalese psychologist, the government should start working on development programs to anchor the youth in the country.
There is not any effort to not implement in politics d'immigration.
The government makes no effort to bring a solution to immigration, to give jobs to the youth, for instance. It is a national problem and immigration is a complex issue. It's true that in history, they needed us. They came here and took our riches. But we can't keep saying it all the time. We live in a world where countries take their responsibilities and pass laws that benefit them. We can't blame France or Italy or any other European country to protect their frontiers or their economy.
While receiving the Ofet Boigny Peace Prize in UNESCO headquarters in Paris, Senegalese President Abdoulaye Wade criticized Sarkozy's selective immigration bill. Just another month before French Senate passes the bill, and young Africans see their hopes go off in the air. In Senegal for FSIN, I'm Jagasek.
With little more than a week until presidential elections in Colombia, indigenous and campesino protests have been met with brutal force by Colombia's armed forces. From Bogota, FSRN's Nicole Carson has more.
Thousands of indigenous peoples and coca growers took over parts of Meta and Nariño earlier this week. They are protesting Colombia's free trade agreement with the United States, unfulfilled land agreements with the government, fumigations that kill food crops, and what many predict will be the upcoming re-election of President Álvaro Uribe. The protests were met with brutal repression, including tear gas, shot at crowds from helicopters, and indigenous homes set afire. The situation in the departments of Cauca and Nariño is still critical. In an urgent call to the media yesterday from the National Indigenous Organization, ONIC, spokesman Germán Casama.
We want to dialogue. This mobilization was to demand a referendum about the free trade agreement. The government can't negotiate the free trade agreement with the United States without the consent of the people.
Hundreds of people have been seriously wounded. At least three people are confirmed dead. And there are reports of people who have been disappeared by the public forces. From Bogota, I'm Nicole Carson for Free Speech Radio News.
If you have any questions or comments about what you heard this evening, please call us at 503-231-8032 and leave a message on extension 203 or send an email to pmnews@kbu.org. If you're listening to KBOO at 90.7 in Portland, in Corvallis at 100.7 FM on translator K264AA, and in Hood River at 91.9 FM on translator K220HR. You can log on to our website at kbu.fm. Our producers for tonight's newscast are Lisa Loving, Noah Eaton, and Jim Thompson. Tonight's audio editors are Liam Delta and Noah Eaton. Special thanks to reporters Rabia Yaman and Lisa Loving. Our engineer is Brian Averill, and the KBU Evening News and Public Affairs Director is Lisa Loving. I'm Joshua Olmsted.
And I'm Liam Delta. Coming up Monday morning on KBU at 7, here the KBU Morning News. At 7:30, Cecil and Celeste host More Talk Radio. Their guest is David Sirota. Magazine writer and political strategist, his new book is Hostile Takeover, How Big Money and Corruption Conquered Our Government and How We Take It Back. At 9, the Old Mole Variety Hour. At 10, on Health Watch, Dr. David Naiman speaks with Dr. William Kamen, author of Easy Labor, Every Woman's Guide to Choosing Less Pain and More Joy During Childbirth. And at 10:30, Earth Watch, Dave Maza interviews environmental journalist David Helvarg about the state of the world's oceans. And at 11, Democracy Now! That's all right here on KBOO, your nonprofit, volunteer-powered, and listener-owned community radio station. Rabindranath Tagore said, "What appears to be coming at you is coming from you."